This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Here comes the sun, here comes the sun, I say it's all right.
Bit of George Harrison and the Beatles. Remember that? Here Comes the Sun. That was one of the great ones that they wrote. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, September the 28th, and by the way, it'll be the last Tuesday that we do our show. More on that a little bit later. In a few minutes, we will be talking with Jonathan Butcher of the Heritage Foundation, and we're going to talk about whether or not school choice advocates need Democrats to get their agenda pushed. Kind of an interesting question, don't you think? Is it all Republicans? Can they get the school choice things done without the help of Democrats down the road? We'll talk about it. And as we speak, top military officials have been hauled before the Senate Armed Services Committee to explain or alibi or whatever you want to call it, the Afghanistan withdrawal, how it was accomplished or maybe not accomplished. And we're going to get some thoughts on this. In fact, they'll still be talking about it, I'm sure, from the proprietor of the Barber Poll, Andrew Ceresi, along with some other thoughts on other things. So stay tuned for that. And this is what's starting to really scare me, and this is inevitable as you move towards socialism, I think. Two cities in Vermont are set to allow non-citizens to vote in elections. They can be illegal aliens, they can be whatever, but they're not Americans, and they're going to be allowed to vote in elections in these two cities. We're going to take a look. And in our ultimate top 10, I think this is going to be the first time we're actually going to have a top nine, if you want to call it that, the nine countries in the world with nuclear weapons. There are only nine that we know of. We'll go from least to most. So stay tuned for that as well. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. For my money, the best barber in the Tampa Bay area. Guys, you got to get over there. Call first for your appointment, 727-733-3773. And again, a big shout out to Good Morning Clearwater, which precedes our show. It's like the warm-up to Elvis, wouldn't you say, in Las Vegas? Their show, Good Morning? No, it's a great show. It stands on its own. Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m., Paul and Tracy and Tony, let them start off your day. You'll be glad you did. All right, so we got, I don't know, what are these generals going to say? Everything went wrong that could possibly go wrong in the withdrawal from Afghanistan. We left our people there. We left our equipment there. We got all kinds of people killed while we were exiting. I don't know that it could have been worse. Now, this straw man of, oh, but we should have left Afghanistan a long time ago, or, oh, you want to stay? No. Afghanistan was a, I don't know, maybe it was a no-win situation, but the way we exited is the thing, not whether or not we exited. For my money, we should have had some sort of a strike force, never declared war on Afghanistan, just went out and killed all the people that had anything to do with coordinating the attack on our country on September the 11th. And we knew who they were. There's sort of like the Mossad in Israel. Remember after the 72 Olympics? Did you know that the Mossad, the Israeli, I don't know what you would call it, it's like a secret police force, underground, they went out and found all the people that had anything to do with the hostage and killing of the Israeli athletes in 1972 in Munich. One by one, they took them down. Why didn't we do something like that in Afghanistan? Rather than sending all of our troops over there, we lost our focus in Afghanistan. The initial idea was to find the people that did what they did to us on September the 11th. Get all of those people from Osama bin Laden on down. Not sit there and, you know, start up a new war and try to bring whatever you want to call it, democracy to Afghanistan. That's not our job. It's a tribal, it's been a tribal country for how many years, you know? We're not going to change their tribal and religious beliefs by bringing guns and ammo into the fray. So I think we lost our focus in Afghanistan. Anyway, so we got what? We got Miley. He's the Joint Chiefs of Staff General, Mark Milley. We got Kenneth McKenzie. He's the head of U.S. Central Command. And we got the Defense Secretary, Lloyd Austin, up there talking away. We should really have President Biden up there, because I think it comes down to the fact that Biden was the one that pushed it. I'm sure these military people said, Mr. President, we can't just pull up like that. We've got to have some sort. Oh, no, he wanted to get out by a certain date, didn't he? He wanted to get out by the end of August. You know, and logic be damned. So all of a sudden, we just take off? Leaving all of those people, leaving all of that equipment? I mean, we looked like scared rabbits running with our tail between our legs, didn't we? And we're supposed to be the greatest country in the world? A ragtag band of the Taliban makes us go running scared like that? I think we could have done a better job. We could have figured this out better. It makes you realize that the more money you throw at a certain thing in this country, the worse it gets. You know? It's like the old thing about too many cooks spoil the broth. We had people that didn't know what the other people were doing. It must have been an absolute mess. Now we're going to have these guys from the military stand up there and say, oh, we are, you know, we salute those that gave their lives, and even these congressmen, you know, we can never forget what they did, you know, as they sit there in their three-piece suits making millions of dollars. Somehow, you get the picture there? It's not a good look. And yet that's where we are with this Afghanistan thing. Okay, enough about that. We're going to take our break. When we come back, Jonathan Butcher of the Heritage Foundation will be here. We're going to talk about, do school choice advocates really need Democrats?
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Tune in Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. for Miss Sarah's Dynamic Gospel Power Show. That's 2 hours of great gospel music every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m., all brought to you by the Ozona Pig Restaurant in Ozona. Yes, that's every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. It's Miss Sarah's Dynamic Gospel Power Show. Tune in on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back on a Tuesday, and we are so glad you are with us as well, and we're delighted to have Jonathan Butcher join us. He is with the Heritage Foundation, and we're going to talk with Jonathan about a piece you can find on the Heritage website about school choice and whether or not, I guess it boils down to this, Jonathan, does school choice need Democratic legislative support? And I guess there was an analysis that has been done on this. Thank you very much for coming on. Let's talk a little bit about it. You know, school choice, I've always had a soft spot for giving vouchers out so that parents will have an opportunity to send their child to a school that can really educate them. So we're 100% behind the whole school choice concept. The question is, do we need Democrats to push and the thing even further along?
Great to be with you. My colleague Jay Green at the Heritage Foundation did an analysis of how Democrats have voted on school choice programs in the states over many years, and have found that, you know, not surprisingly, most of the private school choice laws that have been passed in the U.S. have been in states with Republican governors. Overwhelmingly, the share of Republicans who vote in favor of these programs is far higher than the share of Democrats. So, you know, this is a solidly Republican issue without question.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's always interesting, and I think somewhat hypocritical on the side of Democratic legislators that push against it, push against school choice and vouchers. Because if you typically go and look into their families, their own families, perfect example is President Obama. He sent his two daughters to private schools, the best private schools he could find, you know, in Washington, D.C. And I don't blame him. But a lot of these legislators are saying one thing and doing another with their own children. I find that rather hypocritical. I think most people agree, do they not, that we should give parents the opportunity, if they can, to get out of a failing public school and maybe find a better school with a voucher or something like that?
Well, the surveys around the country demonstrate broad support for private school choice and public school choice, for that matter. And it's the same, you know, broken down by race, by poverty level. And we should want, right, anyone who cares about giving every child a quality option for their learning experience, we should want those on the right and the left to be supporting these programs. So it's not a question of, are we trying to exclude people? I mean, no, of course. The issue is actually a little finer than that. And the question becomes, do we change the nature of these choice programs so that we can get more Democrats to vote for them? And that has been done, actually, in some places. Like, Democrats sometimes will only support a choice program if there's limited eligibility, right? If it's only for children from low-income families. Or they'll only support a choice program if there's a rigorous testing requirement where students have to be evaluated using the state test. And those who, like myself, have watched programs develop over the years understand that that is not neither the best way nor the only way nor even a really effective way to measure student achievement. So what this means is, if we are designing school choice programs to get bipartisan support by sacrificing good policy in order to gain their support, we're really letting students down.
That's true. Right?
And we're sort of limiting it for something that's not going to gain us very much, because Democrats, just in general, don't vote for these programs often.
So do we need to just cut the cord? Is that what you think? So that we can be true to ourselves as, school choice advocates? Do we need to cut the cord with those people, perhaps on the left, that don't agree?
Well, we can look at it from the other side. Why don't we say we need to bring them on board? There's lots of room. The water's warm. Jump in, right? and say that we have evidence from research of what is good policy for private school choice, for school choice in general. And we will share that information with whoever's willing to listen, and we're prepared to make these programs bipartisan, but we're going to make the program, right, abide by good policy and designed according to what we know and how we know the programs will be successful. Well, we're not going to just adjust it just to get it passed or just to make it something that looks bipartisan, thinking that we will somehow gain support that way. Mm-hmm. I think a better avenue is to say, this is what makes a good program. Here's how we're going to design it. You're welcome to come along. We'd love to have you.
Well, that's utopian. I mean, we could do that with anything. We can say, you know, this is the best way to do it. And you can either get on board with us or not, you know. There's always the argument about, well, you think it's the best way to do it. We say it's not, right? It would go back and forth that way. This is why I just wonder. I mean, let's be honest about it. The unions, the school unions, that typically are public school teachers belonging to these unions, fund Democrats. Democrats get money. They get money to push for the better interests of public schools. And public school teachers feel threatened by private schools. They feel threatened. It's like taking away their customers. So if you're funding all of these Democrats and sending money to them, they're going to vote the way you want them to vote. So I don't know that we can ever get to utopia. Your thought on that?
Well, I'll give you two thoughts. I mean, so the first is that's one of the findings from this research, though, is that we can set out what a good policy is and welcome them to join us, knowing that we don't necessarily need their votes in Republican-heavy states to get the program passed.
Right.
I think that's the point here. That's what makes this unique, is that we can say, hey, look, we know what designs a good program, and in a state with a Republican governor and that has historically voted Republican, we don't need to water it down just to make it bipartisan. So I think that's one of the main findings. On the issue of unions, you're exactly right. I mean, they certainly have fought against options outside of assigned public schools. Although I would say it's not just teachers. There's approximately a 1-to-1 ratio today between teaching staff and non-teaching staff in the public school system. And so there are actually quite a few administrators, non-teaching staff, who are members of unions. And unions are taking advantage now of the additional COVID money going to public schools because public schools can hire more staff. They can use this unprecedented amount of spending coming from Washington for public schools to hire more employees, and they don't necessarily have to be teachers. In fact, they can be administrators to handle things like the equity and inclusion, or you know, things that parents are quite opposed to, according to
Thurston. Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. We're talking with Jonathan Butcher, who has graciously consented to come on and talk a little bit about a piece that was written by a colleague of his, J.P. Green. I think it was on September 22nd, with the headline, "Does School Choice Need Bipartisan Support? An Empirical Analysis." So give us some of the findings, Jonathan. You've talked about a few of them already. Different states that have Republican-controlled legislatures, we know they're going to be more prone, I would think, to looking favorably on school choice. That's not always the case. What about some of these states that are, say, controlled by Democrats? Do we have any states that are controlled by Democrats where school choice is either thriving or doing fairly well?
Well, I think we've seen some states really change pretty drastically. West Virginia is one. West Virginia, or if you remember, is a state that was overrun by teacher union protests and walkouts in recent years. It's a state that has never had any form of either private school choice or even charter schools. And they just passed this year one of the largest education savings account programs ever enacted. So that's a pretty significant change, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty significant flip. Now, they do have a Republican governor, but he's one that hasn't always been a Republican, if I'm not mistaken. And so we're seeing a bit of a sea change here. Kentucky is another where they have not had a private school choice program ever until recently. They only in the past few years enacted a charter school law. So, you know, Missouri is another one where they just enacted an education savings account. So that's exciting to see states that have not had choice options before now in 2021 respond to COVID by saying, no, this isn't a money issue. This is a let's create opportunity.
Yeah, but you just mentioned three states that generally tend to be somewhat conservative. Did you not? Missouri, Kentucky, and West Virginia. What about states like, say, Oregon, Washington? How about Illinois? You know, are those states getting anywhere with school choice?
Illinois has. Illinois, in fact, expanded. They have a private school tax credit scholarship that actually was lawmakers expanded this year. That scholarship is a few years old. I think states like Oregon and Washington are going to be a little ways off. In part, I think there are some cultural things going on. Oregon has teacher unions and other interest groups pushing ideas like critical race theory in schools, and that's, you know, antithetical to the idea that parents or any individual can make decisions for themselves without, you know, government telling them what is best. I think that's that goes kind of hand in hand with the critical belief that we need systems and not individual decision making. So I think, you know, those states are a little ways off, but it's not impossible, right? Washington enacted a charter school law. I think it's been 5 or 6 years now, and actually have several healthy and vibrant charter schools that are operating there. So, you know, for some states it may just take a little longer, but it's certainly not impossible. I mean, Illinois' tax credit scholarship is an example, and so's the charter schools up in Washington State.
Yeah. We're talking with Jonathan Butcher, again from the Heritage Foundation, about school choice advocacy and how hard or easy or whatever it is, and how we can get Democrats on board, and this analysis by colleague J.P. Green on all of this. You know, Jonathan, you mentioned CRT a couple of times, critical race theory, and this has inspired a lot of parents, I think, to start attending school board meetings. It's inspired a little more attention to what they are teaching. I mean, you know, 5 years ago, I don't think there was as much interest because we just trusted our teachers, maybe, to be instilling what we thought were the, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, the three R's, and getting our students prepared for the adult real world. Not so much anymore. Now it's become so political. So now there are people, I think, that are starting to start looking again at what is being taught. So this all factors in, I would think, to school choice. I would think a lot of parents would say, you know what, I'm sick of this. I don't trust what's going on here. I'm going to take my child to another school. I'm going to look into schools that are maybe, you know, focused on teaching my child how to add two and two and write a sentence or whatever.
Yeah, for certain. I mean, I think that actually public schools have always been at the intersection of politics and culture. Right, they're funded with public dollars, but we send our children there to prepare the next generation to be participants in society. Okay, mm-hmm. and there have been debates about curriculum over the years. I mean, it's sort of an ebb and flow, right?
Yes,
there was new math back in the, you know, 60s, 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny Can't Read. Then there was the report from the Reagan administration, Nation at Risk, that talked about not just achievement levels but what's being taught. Then you had the issue in the late 1990s with the National Endowment for the Humanities talking about history standards. Then there was the Common Core, which was, you know, about a decade ago, 5 or 6, 7 years ago. And now you have critical race theory. So I think, you know, at varying levels, all of these things have generated parent interest. Critical race theory is in the moment. It's the one that has really angered parents because critical race theory is at its very root racially discriminatory. I mean, critical race theory argues that based on the color of your skin determines your life outcomes and determines how you should act and behave. And that is something that's, I mean, antithetical to our founding documents, founding ideals. I mean, we resent the idea that discrimination could ever be appropriate. And I think that is what has, at its very, very essence, that's what has parents so upset right now.
Yeah. And those other things that were going on that you were talking about, that these different eras of schooling, those things had to do with teaching kids. Critical race theory? What does that have to do with teaching kids? It's instilling a philosophy of politics, a political philosophy. You know what I mean? It had nothing. We've lost our way with critical race theory because we're now forgetting what we've got the students in the classroom for in the first place. At least in the other things, Common Core and all of these, you know, these different things, they had a connection to, hey, here's a new way to look at educating our kids. Not so much this thing.
Well, I think you're exactly right. I mean, it is an example of the way in which culture and the classroom are, you know, kind of inseparable from each other. I mean, I think when parents start to see that their children are being taught a worldview, that they're being taught a perspective on how to digest what they see in the news and what they read and how they understand race in America, which is a very sensitive, you know, sensitive subject, that it makes parents very upset, right? When you start instilling values that are so contrary to what we deeply hold about individual truth and value and, you know, character, yeah, that is
absolutely
what parents so riled up.
You are right, my friend. Jonathan, it's been a real pleasure and very, very important and interesting topic talking with you today. Thank you so much for coming on. Look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Jonathan Butcher of the Heritage Foundation. Very interesting. All right. We're going to take our break. And when we come back, I'm looking up at the screen here. This guy with all these medals on his lapel there. Ed, I don't know. I think you ought to come up there a little more humble, I guess. Talking about the Afghanistan withdrawal, we're going to be talking with our buddy Andrew Ceresi about that and other things. So stay tuned.
Just to let me down and mess me around and then worst of all.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen.
And I'm Tracy Allen.
Please join us every weekday morning from 8 a.m. till 10 a.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
You can also watch us on Facebook Live on our Good Morning Clearwater Facebook page and on YouTube. Just search Tantalk Radio Network.
Every morning we'll be talking about current events, sports.
Yay, sports!
News, entertainment, weather, and traffic. Have an opinion? You can call us.
That's right. Join us every weekday morning, 8 a.m. till 10 a.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. I don't know where that bullet shot went. I'm looking around here in the room here, Ed. Did we have a broken window now? I don't know. Anyway, that was interesting. Welcome back to Freedom Works. By the way, we have an announcement to make. We are going back. If you've been with us long enough, you know this. We are going back to our Monday, Wednesday, and Friday programs rather than Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. And we will start that next week. Same time, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern time, but maybe a little more balanced, right? Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So we'll be pushing that a little bit as we go along this week. And we are looking forward to that. Today is our last Tuesday, as a matter of fact. So just to let you know, we'll still be on Mondays and Fridays. We're just changing from Tuesday to a Wednesday show. Well, I'm watching up here, and these military people are getting grilled, as well they should be, for what happened in Afghanistan. It's made us look, I don't know, what's the word? It's emasculated us on the world stage, the way the thing turned out. Anyway, do we have our buddy Andrew, the Master Barber, with us? I assume we do. Andrew, I know you were down on the dumps a little bit yesterday when we talked. I think, you know, a lot of us are very kind of depressed about what we are seeing in our country. Do you even bother to listen to any of this general testimony, these generals testifying?
You know, Paul, did you see where they put Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Schuller in the brig?
Tell us about that. I think I did hear a little bit about
it. Yeah, they put him in the brig because he said that there needs to be accountability in the military for what happened in Afghanistan. He was asking questions, so they put a highly decorated lieutenant colonel in the brig.
You're right. In fact, while you're talking, I just found the story. I'm going to bring myself and others up to date on it. This is an outspoken Marine officer. He went viral. This is Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Schuller, who went viral for blasting the military's leadership amid the mess in Afghanistan. He's been sent to the brig. Now, here's his father. His father says, all our son did is ask the question everybody was asking themselves. But they were too scared to speak out loud. He did. So why are they throwing him into the hooskow on this one? Have you... What's their... Andrew, what is there?
Just because he asked a question, Paul.
Yeah, that's
terrible.
You know
what moron Biden is doing, too? He's trying to get pushed through, him and his administration. It's the people in the military who do not accept to get the vaccine, they're going to have dishonorable discharge.
Oh, that's crazy. You know, this is backfiring. This is backfiring on them. Look at all the hospital workers. Look at all these hospital workers that are... They're refusing to... Look at all the hospital workers. I think it's in New York in particular. They won't take it. They won't take the shot.
Well, you know, until the American people are willing to sacrifice their needs for their own selfish being, this country will not change. Okay, do you see what Mike Lindell has gone through with these woke companies that won't carry his products?
Right? Yes, that's another thing. These people...
Well, the American people... Mm-hmm. Because of their selfishness. Say you love that McDonald's cheeseburger. You got to have a McDonald's cheeseburger, right?
Right.
But you find out McDonald's, you know, they're a woke company, and they believe in this and believe in that. Okay, that the conservatives don't believe in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you need to give up that cheeseburger.
They need to give up
people.
They need to give up taking a political stance. I want to eat my cheeseburger, and I don't want to hear from them on politics.
I agree with you. I agree with you, but they're doing it anyway.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, and the American people are falling for it. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. You got the football with their anthem that they're playing. Well, the people just got to watch football. They can't give it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Paul. Until the people stick together and say they have had enough and boycott the hell out of these people, they're going to keep doing what they're doing because they're winning. The American people are selfish and will not give up their needs to get with this country.
Okay, but Andrew, let's back up a little bit. Don't you think over the long haul that maybe this is a bad phase we're going through, but don't these companies like McDonald's or the NFL, aren't they going to listen to their fans or to their customers? If their customers are screaming, for instance, about playing the Black National Anthem before an NFL game as opposed to playing the Star-Spangled Banner, or they're talking about some sort of wokeness, you know, in the corporate office at McDonald's, and then all of a sudden, you know, they've got people that are saying, you know, I'm going to go to Chick-fil-A or something like. Don't you think that that's the way to do it?
Paul, they people are not doing it, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do it.
That's because they don't follow it. They don't understand. Most of them, that when I buy a hamburger, I'm not thinking politics. I'm thinking my stomach, right? And I don't care what their... I don't even know what their politics are because it's a corporation, and a corporation is made out of the stockholders. Now, there are a few execs at the top, and they might have a political pressure going on with somebody or other, but I just want my hamburger.
Right, but as long as they keep going along with what they're doing with their wokeness, Paul, and you keep buying that hamburger, who's winning?
I know, but then I've got to go down the grocery store, figure, okay, now is Coca-Cola,
right. Exactly,
is Coca woke company, or is Pepsi a woke? Oh, maybe 7-Up. Oh, I better not buy this hamburger. Oscar Mayer hot dogs, what are they? I mean...
Well, let me ask you a question, Paul. What's more important? Your freedom and your love for the country, or that cheeseburger?
Well, my stomach. I got to eat before I can worry about
the
country.
Okay, well, you can make your own hamburger, can't you?
Yes.
Okay, Paul, I'm sorry. You're not going to win this one with me, Paul.
I'm not trying to take you off your belief. Okay. I agree with you.
And you know,
I agree.
Tell me, what about Biden? All right. Isn't he breaking the law right now? Didn't the Supreme Court pass it? The stay in Mexico law has to stay in effect?
Yes, the Supreme Court said that they have to honor that agreement with
well,
that.
How come he's not? How come they're not?
Because you're right. They are. They're trying to avoid it. They're trying to figure out a way of passing legislation. They're trying to stall it. They're trying to do everything but follow it.
They should put handcuffs on that damn Biden. Take him out of the White House right now. He's breaking the law. If that was Trump, they'd be all over it.
I think he's committed impeachable offenses.
No question about
I think his dereliction of duty at the border is an impeachable offense. He has an intentional dereliction of duty, and he's the commander in chief. You could almost impeach him for going against perhaps the advice of his military in the way they left Afghanistan, but I think that one would be harder to do. But I think it's our border where he could be impeached.
Hey, I'll tell you another one.
Yeah.
I think the people in New York are going to be begging for Cuomo to come back pretty soon. I think some girls are going to line up just to get a pinch to get him back, because this governor that took over is really a nutcase.
Okay, now tell us, first of all, I can't remember her name. It's a woman.
I don't remember either, to be honest.
What is she doing that's a nutcase?
Well, she says, you know, she's a Christian, and that God says you need to get these vaccines.
So she's forcing people in the state to get the vaccines.
No, she's telling them, God's telling her.
Right.
They need to get, she's a nutcase.
God's telling her, but I mean, is she making everybody get the vaccine?
She's trying to force it, though.
Okay.
The nurses are getting fired at midnight tonight. She's going to bring in the National Guard to take their place.
So, this comes back to the freedom of choice that we were talking about, right? This comes
freedom
back to the
choice.
Yeah, freedom of choice.
They're taking that away, Paul.
Yeah, it's
we're letting it happen.
There's no question that there is a real mess going on right now. There's also they're trying to pass this multi-trillion-dollar budget that's being stalled. They're trying to they're trying to increase the debt limit. It's like you have a credit card, Andrew, and you go, "Oh, okay. I've now reached my limit of borrowing on my credit card. Now I'm going to go to the credit card company, or I'm going to raise my own debt limit. They only gave me a $5,000 credit limit. I'm now about to exceed. Now I want a $10,000. And you set it. You know, you set your own term. Well, of course, the credit card company would go out of business because you're not paying your bill. But we can do that in Washington, right?
That's right. Well, if people ran their homes like we're running Washington, everybody would be losing their homes.
They'd be losing their homes, then we would have no credit card companies or any. Nobody would do any work. Nobody would do any work. They weren't going to get paid.
Paul, look at it. They're not doing no work, Paul. Look at the state of this country. Look what has gone on with this moron and the whole administration. Until the American people do as I say and go against all this wokeness, it's not going to happen because we're letting wokeness win.
Yeah.
Period.
The trick is to get everybody on the same page, and that we will never do, right? We'll never do that.
That's because I think half of them don't know how to read now.
Well, there's a million reasons why we cannot agree. This is a multi-whatever you want to call it. You know, everybody's got an opinion. Just like everybody has a rear end, everybody has an opinion, right? So it's very hard to get everybody to agree.
No, Paul, if we don't agree on things, this country is doomed.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is why we had a constitution, but we're not following it.
That's right.
We thought we had agreement on a constitution. If we can agree to follow the constitution, that would be the answer, would it not?
Yes, it would, Paul. Unfortunately, we are not.
Correct. And you mentioned trying to get around the Supreme Court with with the people on the border, and you're right. And we have to follow the Supreme Court that says you got to keep those people in Mexico or at least on the other side of the border wall as long as the Supreme Court has made that ruling.
I saw a little thing today on the computer. It said Melania fired at Jill Biden. And you know what it was? I had to laugh.
What was it?
You know how they always said Melania didn't stand up next to Trump all the time and stuff? Melania said she didn't have to stand up next to Trump because he was able to stand up by himself.
So, we got to have Joe Biden standing next to Biden so we can stand up.
Hold him up. to hold him up. You saw how he walked away from her, walked right away from her that once. Paul, the Democrat Party should be humiliated and embarrassed of what the whole Democrat Party is today. I don't believe these people understand what's even going on with them. How stupid can they be?
Well, it's reflecting in the polls because Biden is now...
He's down to 40%.
Yeah, he's dropping it like a rock with favorability. So,
and if they're saying he's at 40%, I'm telling you he's at 25%.
Yeah, I know, because they can be heavily skewed towards Democrats when they do the surveys. I agree with that one, too. Hey, on another note, how is your beloved wife, Nicole? Is she still... is she coming out of all of this with her?
She's coming out of the COVID. She's doing fine, getting along good. The old man is doing good. I'm the one falling apart.
Have you been back to the barbershop at all recently?
Of course I'm back.
Oh, you're there. Okay. I might come over for a haircut if I could after the show.
I not only have to work full-time at the barbershop this week, but I still got to take care of two invalid people on top of it.
I know you do.
Normally I only work 3 days a week, you know, but...
I got to take care of Big Ed. Big Ed is an invalid. Why don't you give me some credit for this?
I can see you pushing him around in a wheelchair.
I couldn't push him around in a wheelchair, even with wheels on it. I couldn't push, believe me. But anyway, I might be over for a haircut.
I'll be here, Paul.
Will you, buddy? Okay. Listen, you're a wonderful soul. We love you. God bless you. God bless Nicole. And I'll see you in a little while.
All right, buddy. Be good. Bye-bye.
Do you think he's getting any better, Ed? He's feeling a little more positive? Or he's still kind of cranky about everything, don't you think?
He needs a little uplift, you know? He needs a little, you know, someone to come on, pump him up again.
I'm going to go pump him up at the barbershop.
I know you'll try, but what he needs is, he needs like a DeSantis visit or something like that.
He gets his father.
I know. Maybe.
Do you think we should get the governor down?
Maybe the governor can maybe stop in. We'll write him a letter or, you know, I'll send him an email saying, you know, next time in the area.
We'll have a governor dress up in a Santa Claus suit. He'll be Santa DeSantis. How's that work? No? Okay.
Humiliate the guy.
Excuse me. Let's do a short break and come back. We got a bunch of things I still want to talk about. There's a school where there's some strange things going on and a Vermont non-citizen deal. So we'll be back in a short moment.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We're back. I don't know where he got that song yet, but I kind of like it. Very good. So, in Vermont, you know, we've been worried about this passing out, for instance, was it California, a couple other states, passing out driver's licenses to illegal immigrants, you know, that kind of thing. I think that is the most ridiculous thing that you can do, giving those kinds of rights to people that are not even supposed to be in the country, right?
Have you seen a new $3.5 trillion package they want to put through next? You see what's in there?
Go ahead. I know what you're going to say, but go ahead. Yeah.
Free community college for illegal immigrants.
I have that story here, as a matter of fact. Mm. Not that I was going to bring it up, but you're right.
That's it. I'm just going to start speaking Spanish.
Remember when Biden was running for the Democratic presidential nomination and they asked, would you give health care to illegal immigrants? Remember him? Everybody
said he would.
Everybody raised their hand.
Yep.
Everybody.
Yep.
What is going on? So here in Vermont, listen to this. The Republican National Committee is suing two cities in Vermont over their town charters that allow non-citizens to vote in municipal elections. The chairwoman of the RNC says Democrats are trying to dismantle the integrity of our elections. I think they're right. The case centers around Montpelier and Winooski. Those are two cities in Vermont who, back in May, changed their charters, allowing non-citizens to vote in their elections. Well, this is the thing that I'm worried about, that they'll actually start allowing people with, like, driver's licenses, whether they're a citizen or not, to go into a voting booth. What? We can't have that. You want to destroy the integrity of our elections doing that? I mean, this is the kind of thing. And in Vermont, the Republican governor there, I'm surprised Vermont has a Republican governor, but he vetoed this thing, and then it was overridden by their Senate. The veto was overridden by the Senate with a two-thirds vote. So this is what, you know, is going on. I think it's very, very scary. Now, we talked a little earlier about school choice, right? Listen to this situation in California and what is going on. I don't know how anybody could stand for it. A California teacher who went viral after bragging in a video that she had taken down the American flag in her classroom because it made her feel, quote, uncomfortable. The American flag in her classroom made her feel uncomfortable. And guess what? She suggested her students should say the Pledge of Allegiance to a rainbow flag. A rainbow flag, which was in the room. So you can have a gay rainbow flag, and you can say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag that's a gay rainbow flag because they've taken away the American flag. I would get my kid out of that classroom so fast your head would spin around. It is absolutely crazy. Now, fortunately, somebody had some sense. They removed her from the classroom and put her on leave. I would leave. It would be permanent leave. Woman was identified as Kristen Pitson in Orange County, Newport Mesa school.
This was a teacher, correct?
Teacher.
Yeah, and what gives her the right to do that on her own?
And it's you know, she's teaching a grade school, impressionable kids, right?
Yeah.
These kids, I mean, and they're taking the American flag down and putting, God almighty, if I was, thank God I didn't go through that kind of thing. I don't know. This is a scary thing. So in the video, this is the teacher. She says, okay, so during third period, we have announcements and they do the pledge. I always tell my class, stand if you feel like it. Don't stand if you feel like it. Say the words if you want. Don't say the words if you don't want. Then she said, she took down the American flag because it made me feel uncomfortable.
Oh boy.
So when her students asked about it, she says, well, there's no Old Glory. You can stand and face the pride flag. God.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back to...
It's crazy.
Think back to when I was in elementary school and you stood and you did the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
I don't know if they made you say it, but if you just wanted to stand there and mouth it, you could mouth it. I mean, I don't remember the teacher ever calling out saying, I'm not hearing
you. What if you stayed seated and all the other kids were seated?
Yeah, see that I got a problem with. If it's, stand up, look what we do today.
You don't have to necessarily mouth the words.
With the kneeling,
Right.
So, stand, take your hat off, whatever.
Yeah. This is really going over the board, Crazy. Okay. It is time for our top 10. But we have a top 9, Ed. These are the only 9 countries that have nuclear weapons. And I thought, because of all these things that are going on recently, that maybe we ought to kind of remind ourselves, who's got the most weapons and what countries are they? So without further ado, here we go. Top 10 from least to most countries that have nuclear weapons. Number 9. It's North Korea. They have 40.
Just coming in under the wire.
They just came under the wire. And we know they have nuclear. They don't have food for their their populace is starving to death. Yeah. But they got nuclear weapons. Try and eat from a nuclear weapon.
Put a little sauce on them, mustard, ketchup.
Yeah, that'd be very good. Be dynamite. Okay, number eight. Israel. And Israel's got, according to the arms race bulletin, 90 nuclear weapons. So that's a little more than twice as many as Korea. All right, number seven. India. They have 150. They probably need it, if you think about it, because of the next country, which is number six. Yeah, go ahead. It is Pakistan. Right next door. Pakistan is 160. They got 10 more.
Well, we don't hear a lot of trouble coming out of India, do we?
No.
Other than they want us to re-up our auto insurance,
correct.
The warranty on our insurance.
The only thing we get out of India is a phone call selling you something. But Pakistan and India do not get along. You know that? And they are right next to each other.
Well, they keep it pretty quiet.
Well, that's because we probably... But it's a very volatile situation. Yeah. In fact, Pakistan and Afghanistan is another one. Mm. Okay, let's see. Number five. The United Kingdom. 215 nuclear weapons. Now, you always think of them as kind of a nice little island. Mm. They're a dangerous little island. Number four. A country that feels it has been shunned or shirked by the United States. France. Right? France, 290 nuclear weapons. Mm. So you better be careful about snubbing France. Mm-hmm. Number three.
Let me say Germany.
What? No, it's okay. China.
China, really?
Yeah.
Where is Germany?
Germany's in Europe.
I know.
I'm not going to tell you because we haven't finished.
Oh, okay. I thought, all right, go ahead.
No, that's all right. China's got 320 nuclear weapons. That's a scary scenario.
Okay.
Number two. USA.
Okay.
You know how many? 5,800. So we go from China with 320 to the USA with 5,800 nuclear warheads.
Wow.
That's quite a few. That's quite a jump, is it not? Okay. We're at number one. What do you think is the number one country with the most warheads?
Russia.
Bingo. Russia is right. 6,375. Germany has none.
Really?
Yes. You have to remember that.
Oh, you're right. After
World War II, we defrocked them of weapons. That's just why we have Americans. We still have Americans there.
Just like Japan.
In military bases. You know that?
Japan's not allowed to arm themselves either.
Same thing with
either,
Japan. Yeah. That's why you don't see them on the list. So there you go.
I saw that Germany just switched new leaders.
To a social democrat. Yeah. They're tending to go. Merkel was, I think, a little more conservative. We'll see.
So they're going the wrong way.
I think so. We'll see. All right, my friends. We will be back on Friday. Thanks for listening. Remember, freedom works.